Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Speaking about the Jules Gill, this is actually the introduction to the podcast. I'm Scott Tilford, you're Jules Gill.
Hello.
This is the Untitled Banter podcast, the UBP.
UBP.
Now, this is the podcast, the Untitled Banter podcast. Every week we ask people what their thoughts are, what games they're playing, what different food takes they might have to send some different things over, some mad recipes, some mad cocktails a brewing, if you go back through the hashtag long enough. But also, yes, we've been sent a whole bunch of different questions and ting. So I thought we'd get through as many as possible. First one from Laughing Sunbro, a regular legend.
Absolutely.
Who just says, can you expand on your Mortal Kombat 2021 thoughts and what a sequel would or should do better? Now, I thought I can bring you into this as well, because he said, aside from peaking in the first 10 minutes, of course.
Should we basically take everyone on the journey that is your hype train? So we're back a couple of years ago when this project was first announced. It was going into the
works. We did a fan casting,
and I think that we did a bloody good job of that.
I think we did,
still go back and watch it, and it's still, I'd say it's still worth a watch just because of how wrong we were on some of the choices
I'm sure we cited.
We did actually get someone right. I can't remember which one.
I wanted Ikuro Away from the Raid to be Liu Kang, and I don't know if we mentioned Joe Taslim, but obviously he's also from the Raid, and he eventually played Sub-Zero.
Yeah. There was it was a glorious time to be alive. And then we had the horrible doldrums of waiting, hearing all of the cancellation stuff, the fact that it was elongating the project. Everything was like shutting down. And obviously we had the big global bastard that was COVID come in, and that's changed things dramatically. But finally, in the about 3 or 4 weeks ago, you suddenly started ramping back up again. The train was going up the mountain.
Because
it was
trailer.
About to take off. It might as well have had wings on it because it was lifting off the track
with the steam
you were hitting it with.
So good. I was giddy from that thing. I was freaking out about it. And then I watched it. And it's really bad, Jules Gill.
This is the problem. This is a problem with video game movies in general, and also with video game trailers especially. Mm. Like, all of the best bits are in the trailers. They can't help themselves. They are just shooting their wad every single time. But the problem is that films like this really only work best as short films. If you look back at fan-made short like Mortal Kombat things, it's one fight done incredibly well, and people leave it going, that is the quintessential experience. You boiled it down into that one thing. Mm-hmm. Padding out those moments, because there are moments in the new Mortal Kombat film that are genuinely good. Like, don't get me wrong.
I have seen him. I wasn't joking.
I enjoyed a lot of the fight scenes. I enjoyed the bad bits of the fight scenes as well, like when the CG just totally tanked and they decided to animate it using MS Paint or something like that. But everything in between those points was bunk. So much terrible, terrible dialogue. Having that one bit where it was just kind of like, hey, you can teleport anywhere in the world, right? Having that as a piece of exposition in a film, the person who wrote that should have been hung, drawn, and quartered. Because that is like film writing 101 out the bloody window.
It's the bit when, not to do spoilers, but there is a bit when the whole group needs to be reinvigorated and they need to learn to fight again. That is literally the thematic beat of that scene. And a character just says, no, we need to keep fighting. And then it just cuts between their faces going like, we do.
And then what it should have done is cut to a third person, either like me or you, just going like, no, I want to sit down for five. I've got a pucker pie that I want to eat.
Fuck yeah, pie from NetherRealm's finest. I think, I don't know, for me, it was just like there are immaculate highs. There are some fatalities in there that I didn't think I'd ever see on the big screen that are brilliant. But for me, it's the core stuff. Now, Sumbro saying, can I expand on stuff? There is a full video on the main What Culture channel. I literally just dove in. Our boss was just like, do whatever angle you want. So I was like, I'm going to call it everything that it gets wrong. And I'm just going to dive in.
I have to admit, this is one thing that I absolutely love about your presenting style, is that like you manage to encapsulate an emotion whenever you're doing your sort of like, let's just call them rant videos. Like that's because that's what they are. Like you can just be sat in front of a camera and just be told go. And then in 10 minutes, 20 minutes time, you just go stop. And you go, cool, right. That's everything I've got to say about that.
Yeah,
whereas me, I've got to like script everything out. I've got to rework it, retool it, get it like going in my mind and then think about these key points. And you just goes, nah, this is it. You've hit the mine of gold. And you are about to get a big squirty burst right in your face.
Like that's another thing of behind the scenes type thing is that we either do it to cam, like to camera, and it is just a rant. It is improvised or whatever. Because I love improvising stuff. Like my Final Fantasy VII remake review was just my thoughts at 10 a.m. after finishing it 4 a.m, 6 hours previous.
Yeah,
and it lasted for half an hour because I've lots to say. In Mortal Kombat's case, I was like, I need to write it all down. So I did it as a voiceover just to sort of like do that. But I could have just ranted, but I knew it would get too sprawly.
Yeah,
and it's just. Yeah, but I mean, to sort of elaborate, I mean, I would recommend, obviously I'd recommend that video. There's some stuff in there, but I think it was just, it's the core tenets of filmmaking. It's the pacing, the storytelling, the characters, the editing. Like every single fight scene is over edited to the point where I don't remember any of it other than just those two characters fought each other and you're just cutting around too much. And the craziness of the final 20 minutes where it's just, they have their, you know, the group scenario, we need to do this, we need to do that. And it's intercut with like fights that literally take seconds and then you're back. And then I thought it was a mess.
It lacks mortal confidence in itself to maintain a shot. It's something that speaks to, and I'm not generalizing here, it's a terminology that it uses quite a lot. It's the Adderall generation, where it's the people who cannot focus. And so what they do in filmmaking is they do 10, 20 cuts in a single like 10 second shot because of the fact that they're just like, oh, it's the way to inject it with energy. What it does in actuality is it confuses everything. You don't have a through line. This too, all these cuts are jarring. They're awful. There's like somebody took the is it the biopic on it's not the Beatles, is it? It might
maybe
be the Beatles, where it's like they're doing the no, it's Queen.
Okay,
yeah, it's the Queen film. They
Bohemian Rhapsody.
That's the one. Yeah, sorry, I just completely forgot what it was called. Mind blank. Then they arrive at a breakfast, and in between, it's just characters talking, but they cut us something like 30 to 40 times.
Yes, I remember
and
seeing
Cy
that.
And Cy Gallagher, he used to work for us, he pointed it out, just going like, this one, best editing, how?
But it's just like, there is a, I mentioned this in like the video, but there's a mentality in a lot of and big blockbuster Hollywood films where more edits equals more fun somehow in these scenes.
Doesn't.
Like, no, like you need to communicate the kineticism of the fight through the editing. It's like, no, just let these martial artists, who are brilliant martial artists, choreograph a fight.
One of the main reasons why The Raid did so incredibly well is because the fight choreography managed to actually stick on those that were in combat, like for elongated amounts of time, to a point where you're like, wow, how are they remembering to do all of these moves and these combat things? Like, yeah, sure, there were kinetic cuts in certain places, but people remember more when something lingers rather than when something cuts.
Well, I adore The Raid film. Like, obviously, Joe Taslim from The Raid, like like cutting around him is the worst thing. Like he's an immaculate martial artist. And like, you know, there was a behind the scenes thing that he had to be told to slow down because he was too efficient, too quick and everything else.
Do you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of every time you watch those content creators who can't even get through a bloody sentence and they've got
to
cut.
I can't talk, to be fair.
No, you can talk. That is the big difference. These people here, I do not understand what it is. It would be like a person just going, oh, so today is Wednesday. Hard cut. And I went down to the shops and hard cut. And it's just kind of like, can you not formulate an entire coherent sentence without doing that? Like, just do it again, bro. Like,
I guess that's
what the film feels like.
Maybe that's what it comes from. That I don't necessarily mind that depending on who it is. But I think like that does give the edit itself a bit of energy, which is maybe where it comes from a corporate standpoint of like, okay, what are the kids into? YouTube style editing. Let's edit the living hell out of this stuff. But I mean, even that idea of applying that to film does go back quite a while. There was a really great YouTube channel called Every Frame of Painting that broke down the difference between
I remember this.
Like Western fight choreography and Eastern fight choreography. And like the difference between the way someone like Jackie Chan used to shoot the likes of Rush Hour and old school martial arts films versus the way that the Guardians of the Galaxy does it and Marvel does it, where you're cutting just too much and you're missing out on impact shots and things like that. So yeah, I love Mortal Kombat so much that I just had so many core problems with the way the whole world was presented, and things like wasting the pit stage at the end and the Arcana stuff, where like it's not a bunch of people from a bunch of different colors, creeds, backgrounds, everything else. It's just, if you're like focused enough, you can develop a superpower. And I'm just like what are you doing to this? I hated all that stuff. But anyway,
sequel.
Well, the thing is, like, that interview with Greg Russo, the writer, said that it was originally planned as a trilogy, but that wasn't in the marketing, that wasn't flagged at all. But that does explain why nothing happens in the first one, because apparently the second one is going to be the tournament. And I was just like, you could have said that probably would have helped.
I'm not gonna lie, it's a dumb move to start a reboot or a soft relaunch of a franchise and not include the titular tournament. That is the dumbest thing. Like, it is like saying, it's gonna be Superman, but he doesn't fly.
He just hangs out for a bit, and it's just, come back next time when we've got like the actual thing you came for.
It's like, because like sometimes they can work, don't get me wrong, like the Fellowship of the Ring is easily one of the better ones out of the trilogy because of the fact that it eases into the story.
At least they're covering
slowly.
Ground though.
Yeah, they're covering ground in it, but like, imagine if it was like a Superman film, but you spent 45 minutes with just Clark Kent doing busy work.
I just think that whole thing of, I feel like there's a trend in a lot of new TV shows, new movies, where it's like, we need to explain everything, we need to have an origin story, we can't just go with the thing. And even like Liu Kang, it's not that he like trained really hard as a Shaolin monk and he just has this innate fire ability. It's his Arcana, and he got it because he defeated like a criminal, and then he got it because he was so annoyed. And it's just like you don't need to do this. Like, you can just have characters have powers. But anyway, next question from Paul O'Brien. Only buy Returnal or Mass Effect Legendary Edition. Advice on which one? I've never played a Mass Effect.
Right, okay. If you want to feel like you're having... What's the best way to describe this? If you want to experience an MDMA rush, then pretty much I would suggest getting Returnal, because my God, it's intense fun for about 2 to 3 hours, and then it kicks you right in the nads with a come down so hard that sends you right back to the beginning again.
That
you want to
thing,
cry.
I finally managed to get past the third boss the other night, and then I managed to maintain that run and beat the fourth boss as well. And I was like, okay, this feels great. And the third boss, like you said, it is like this interactive fireworks display. It's like being in the middle of like Fantavision.
Yeah.
And it's great. But for me, you can't, if you've not played Mass Effect and all three games are available, assumedly it'll be solid. Like, obviously we're recommending something that is out versus something that isn't out yet, but hopefully EA have let BioWare do the necessaries and it's actually going to play well. Because for me, if you've not played Mass Effect, then this should be like, that is gaming royalty. Like, that is the best sci-fi franchise in gaming ever. I
mean, you regularly see Mass Effect 2 topping the best games ever made. And it is worthy of that praise. I think it is the perfect blend of sci-fi, action, drama. It's when people say it's a space odyssey, it fits it perfectly.
New one has the combat model from 2 and 3. They have this sort of weird hybrid thing where it should play like 2 and 3, which is where the combat got a lot better. Are you planning on going back through Mass Effect? Because I've been waiting to do like a whole new run.
I don't know how I'm going to find the time though, because that is three very lengthy games to do it. And I've just finished Disco Elysium, the final cut again.
Nice.
And I am just working my way through. I can't reveal which game it is, but it is a game that's coming out soon. Yeah, I'm working my way through that, which is proving to be a
Resident
bit
There's Resident Evil 8
beefy.
As well, which just dropped today. And the Dark Alliance remaster, which just randomly granted all of our dreams, my dreams at least yesterday.
And you know what, Scott? I finally caved in. I am getting a PS5.
Yes!
I'm going to join the ranks. as soon as one becomes available, I'll get an order in. I'm getting that and a Switch sorted out now, because now that obviously we're going back into the offices and stuff, I want to be able to play something on the journey up to you guys, and also be able to, when you do streams and stuff like that, because I know we'll be using the PS5 more than the Xbox, I think, because majority of us have PS5s.
Yes,
I can jump in and play with you guys as well on that.
Yeah, man. Well, I mean, you've got the PS5 is not like crazy overloaded with exclusives right now. It is Demons, it is Miles Morales, and it is Returnal. But
I want to play Village bad, man. I
downloaded Village last night and I was ready to go at midnight, and then I remembered I had to be up at like 7:30 this morning. So I was like, I can't do it. And so it's still just sitting there, just literally.
She's literally beckoning you over, just going like with her big long fingernails.
Apparently, I've not seen it, but apparently that big Freddy Krueger style hand that she has is her actual hand, and those are her fingernails.
Yeah,
I thought it was like that. She had like a big glove, But it's she's
why are you surprised that a Resident Evil game has mutating sort of appendages? It is their bread and butter.
I should have guessed that from the beginning. Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, after playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I noticed there's a lot of choices that basically don't matter. So that got me wondering whether player choice can actually ruin a linear storyline. Now, this thing, I was going to say, I think this is a very pertinent question because I think I totally agree with that. I always go down one route and then just get annoyed that I didn't go the other way. That's sort of, that's always me.
There is a line of thinking that moral choices weaken overall narrative in terms of you've got to break it down, right? So you've got either a player-controlled adventure in which they determine everything they do and it creates a granular experience which should, on paper, be different to your friends and therefore create a more personal and immersive experience, but it comes at the cost of every single developer tearing their hair out because they then have to make every single choice reflect back to what your previous actions have. They have to have impact. They have to have payoff at the end as well, because if they don't, then it was all for nothing. Versus a totally prescribed adventure which has the capacity to be far better than anything that you could have designed yourself because of the fact that the developers are choosing the best moments for you. They are directing you in a way that would make a truly memorable experience, but also has the capacity to be terribly written and therefore worse as a result. There's pros and cons to either side.
Yeah. I think it's hard as well in terms of does this thing feel like it's going to have a sequel? Because then it's which one of them becomes canon and does that wipe out what people chose?
Totally.
Also, my sort of go-to with this, because it's not like I'm wiping out all moral choices, but I think of something like The Last of Us, and I think if they'd made it so that if that final sequence where Joel saves Ellie was a choice, it wouldn't have landed anywhere near as powerfully as it does because you're forced to embody that character as they do the thing. And also, I don't know if you have the same weird, I think it's a dichotomy kind of thing where, you get a choice in a game and it's like, do I do the thing that I want to see as the player because that sounds like a cool scenario, or do I do the thing that the character would do? I don't know if you have that split, because I always never know which one's what I should do.
Well, there's, I think that somebody put out a report fairly recently saying that it was actually to do with the Mass Effect stuff, that the Renegade storyline only saw something really low, like a 13% completion rate of people going full Renegade, the entire way through all of the three games.
You would lose every companion if you went full Renegade the entire way through.
Exactly. So they don't even reward you for going down those paths. So it doesn't even become a choice in some games, because you can only get the bonuses if you go 100% light side or 100% dark side. Mm-hmm. And therefore, you're not really choosing. You're basically saying, I'm committing to this path now. Therefore, the choice has actually already been made for me the moment I go, cool, do I want to play A or B?
Yeah. It's definitely like a case-by-case thing. Because if you talk about Mass Effect, I love the fact that my shepherd or our shepherds feel like our own path through that mythos. There are main beats to hit, but there are also big choices that sort of come back around in 2 and 3. It's strange. I don't think it's necessarily a one-and-done type thing, but I can cite more examples where the game made the decision for me, like The Last of Us, than I can ones where I was glad to make a choice at the very end. Because all that happens is you just reload your save and do the other one and then see what happened anyway.
Literally that in Life is Strange, when you literally have the powers to rewind time and just see what the other options are. So you're just picking the best thing, and it's like,
I like that as a comment on that stuff, because there was that was sort of Don't Nod's little comment on the way that Telltale stuff was going.
But they didn't use it as that. They did it in a sense that it was you are shaping the game, and it's kind of well, I'm not really. I'm just picking whichever one best suits my character.
Yeah, and then I'm kind of going to rewind and just do it all again anyway. Yeah. I guess I'm just thinking of recent games that sort of landed with a choice. Ghost of Tsushima's final choice is pretty huge. But again, I don't know if that would have landed better if they made you do that choice to keep it vague. But I still love the way that thing went.
There is the obviously up-and-coming Biomutant, which is saying that the choices go a lot into that, and they've said that they've gone quite granular with the experience there. Yet to see it pay off, but I'm interested to see that.
Yeah. I keep forgetting that thing's coming out. I just keep sort of, the cat game with the big swords. And that's
2017.
Yeah,
2017 was when it was first announced.
Little lovely Rach mentioned that when she used to work here. When she first started, that was the first thing she mentioned, and then now it's finally coming out.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Next question from Rex Wolfley. With all these games coming out now, it makes me wonder, how are review assignments at What Culture decided? Tell us how the sausage is made. Speaking of, do you have a favorite sausage? I'm a bratwurst guy myself. Now, I included this one because we have actually talked about review stuff before. We can dive back into it a little bit.
Yeah.
Also, sausage-wise, I must recommend, I think it's called the Anduin sausage or the Alduin sausage.
Okay. The Alduin. Isn't
Alduin's
that the
dragon, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's probably not the Alduin sausage.
It comes very smoked. It's a fiery sausage.
The Anduin one that I'm trying to remember is the one that I had in New Orleans, which came inside a big bread basket thing called a pooper, which is very
amazing.
Good. So I got a big pooper, and then there was a little sausage inside it, which makes me sound like I've lost my mind, but it was very delicious.
You looked inside a pooper and found a little sausage.
I did.
Okay,
it was
fine. It's fine, dude. It's fine.
I'm sure it's called Anduin. I'll do. I'm gonna Google it.
You
tell me your favorite sausage.
Favorite sausage pre-veganism was probably chorizo, just because of the fact that it is just spicy, it is Moorish, it has got that nice chewy, almost like jerky flavor to it, which texture to it, which I really like.
My sausage is called an Anduil sausage.
Anduil.
A-N-D-O-U-I-L-L-E.
Is it a circular sausage? Like, does it go around? Is it just like a
wheel? I don't know. It comes with the whole red beans and rice thing. It was when I went to Holland's, it was just like, let's get all this stuff. It was lovely.
And then post-veganism, I probably would say the best sausage is... I think they're called Plant Kitchen, Tesco's. They do these... they do, like, bangers, and they actually have, like, a skin on them that actually does feel like real sausage skin.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's nice.
I still love experimenting with different vegan sausages. I can't think of any off the top of my head in terms of the brand. I think Little Willy's is one that was quite nice. Just
Poopers and Willy's, Little Willy's.
You know, Friday. But some of that stuff was pretty good. In terms of the how review assignments are decided, it's just a mix of who's best for the job, ostensibly. Like, who knows the franchise, who wants to review it.
Weirdly enough, like, do you remember back in the day we got sent a lovely set of personalized top Trump cards?
That was like 2016.
Yeah, it feels like that's what it is. When you join What Culture, you kind of just like, you introduce yourself, you have a like settle in for a bit, you do some writing, and then you basically have that conversation at the table where you just go, by the way, I really like Bioshock, or by the way, I really like Resident Evil, and everyone will just be like, oh, cool, I like this, but I'm a huge
tattoo.
Fan of like, yeah, I'm like you, for example, you're like, I love Metal Gear Solid, and we're just like, cool, right, you're the Metal Gear Solid guy, because of the fact that we like it, but there are people who love it.
Yeah.
And then once you find your sort of niches, you then just go, cool, right, so for example, Ben Roy is besotted with the Resident Evil.
It's like his favorite thing.
So, of course, I mean, he watches all of the movies repeatedly, mm-hmm. even though they're terrible, even though he knows he's played all of the games. He's personal friends with Colin Salmon. Like, the man knows no bounds when it comes to loving that franchise. Mm-hmm. So it was obviously going to go to him when it was Resident Evil Village was announced.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There are times where we have not conflicts, but it's kind of like, oh, I'd like to review that. Mm-hmm. Can I review this one? And then usually it goes into like a trade-off thing where you go, cool, right, well, I'm down to reviewing, I don't know, this game, and I just go, I'll trade you for that one.
That's literally. Also to address like the whole, you know, whoever's the biggest fan type thing, it's not a case of just going like, okay, you'll score this highly because you're a fan. Like, you still need to be able to analyze the pros and cons. Yeah, like, it's not like something gets an automatic 5 stars just because someone liked it. In Resident Evil 8's case, Ben Roy like absolutely adored that game and just said it. He literally said it when he was messaging me as he was playing through. He's like, this makes RE7 feel like a beta. So I'm just like... Yeah, I mean, that thing's been getting like 9s across the board and then a couple of like 4s and lower stuff. Like, I saw Greg Miller saying like, oh, just skip it altogether. And I'm like, I wonder what this game does that's either brilliant or put people off.
From what I can tell, it's if you're a fan of the way that Resident Evil was moving towards action games, like in Resident Evil 6 and indeed Resident Evil 7, then you'll really like the fact that this is more action focused. It doesn't do horror so much as it does action and gore. It's There are a few suspenseful moments, but I feel like the puzzle solving has been dialed down. The combat has been dialed up to the point where people are actually calling it a shooter rather than a survival horror game now.
Right.
And that obviously is going to stick in the craw of certain people, like especially when you've just come off the back of the remakes of Resident Evil 2 and 3, which were action heavy but still maintained a glorious survival horror feel. This is a total departure.
That was the thing with RE2 Remake, where I was like, oh, this is Resident Evil. And I love 7, but I was just like, oh man, this is the perfect mix. I mean, third person, over shoulder combat, nice puzzles, nice combat.
Mm-hmm. I went back to it and I was just like, this might well be my favorite one. I love Resident Evil 4 two bits, but because it's so recent, because they did so much with a beloved classic, I was like, yes, please.
It just felt good. And all the gore tech stuff is really fun to experiment with. And there's things like that. But yeah, with RE8, I guess, because it's like this spiritual sort of follow up to RE4, like it is channeling a lot of For the Merchants back, the inventory systems back, things like that. That I wonder if because RE4 was this massive shift towards action, if they've tried to replicate that again. We're both speaking as people who haven't touched it yet, but you know, this time next week we'll have played a bit of it.
Do you know what, Scott? Yeah. I have to admit, I've watched 4 video reviews of it. One which was an hour long, and I've watched I've read 2.5 articles of reviews in it, and just because of the fact that I'm besotted with it, but I haven't picked it up.
See, I know very little. I played the village demo. I know that Lady Dimitrescu is the big old lady. She's got some daughters and it's in a castle and that's it. And I've stayed away. And even Ben Roy this morning was like, I've written Ending Explained. Can you read that? I was like, no, I don't want to know anything. Nope. So I need to like burn through it so I can catch up. But yeah, I'm looking forward to getting stuck into that game. But yeah, review stuff. It's whoever's just best for the job with a mix of different factors. Next question from Steve Ahrens, who says, hey guys, loving the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you, mate.
I'm going through a bit of a dry spell when it comes to gaming. I want to play something new, but I never end up in the mood. Have either of you guys ever gone through periods where you haven't felt like playing games? And if so, how did you get over it?
Totally, my friend. It is possible to get burned out on anything in life, especially entertainment, because oversaturation and basically doing something again and again, no matter what routine it is, will eventually come with its pitfalls. I was lucky in the sense that when I found my dry spell, which was it was actually after the glorious high that was the double whammy of Horizon Zero Dawn and God of War. Played them like pretty much back to back. I had no other game I knew was going to be able to touch those fun moments for quite a while. So what I did instead was I just picked up the paintbrush and started painting Warhammer stuff. Like, because I thought, cool, I'm going to move into something completely different, be less of a... be more engaged with something completely tactile versus something that is like telling a story to me. And I found that got me over it, because I went through a long period of just seeing games come out and just being like, yep, that looks cool. Sitting down and playing maybe an hour or two of them and just being like, I'm not connecting with this. And I know I should be. And I know that it is a good game, but I'm just not giving it a fair rub.
Yeah, it's strange, because I think, I've gone through periods where I've kind of gone like, oh my God, like a lot of these games, maybe some bigger titles that come in a row, all have crafting systems, all have loot components, all have these different mechanics that are crossing over. And I'm just kind of like you said, you play the beginning and you kind of go, okay, I get what this is. And, you know, is it just me? Is it the industry shifting towards this and it's not appealing to me as much? I've kind of like felt those things before. The things that snap me out of it are trying something indie, something that's completely different. Maybe try a genre that you haven't tried before and see if that sort of like perks something in you. Or like Jules said, do something completely different. Like for me, it's always guitar. It's always games and guitar. Mm-hmm. And I'll just go and just play for an entire afternoon. And maybe like a song or a passage that you're practicing or something else will remind you of something from a game, or your subconscious will trigger something that it'll just be, oh man, I'm going to go and pick that back up, that story beat, or like that piece of music reminds me of this or whatever. And it kind of becomes an interconnected thing. Or just delve into old favorites, like just delve into the comfort blanket of something from 10 years ago that you loved, and remember why you like the medium. Not the medium itself, the medium itself is actually brilliant, but the medium as in gaming. You know, remembering like why you like game mechanics, why you like certain feels of titles, the feeling of interacting with different stuff rather than some of the newer stodge that's come out across the last few years, which is just how much can you put up with the game, like in terms of like the adventures, like here's 9 premium currencies. And it's I didn't buy this to do a spreadsheet maths lesson. I bought this to actually play the thing. So
you do raise a good point, though, which is another thing that could help you get over the hump, as it were, is to look for a game that you and your friends can play. Because if you can decide on a game then that is, maybe if it's just like an online shooter where you don't need to think too much, or if it's just like a silly little puzzle game or something like that, if you're playing with friends online or in person, then that will definitely help you get over it, because you'll start bonding. And it's the connections that really make us feel enamored with video games as well.
Plus, like anything is great in co-op or four-player. Like that Dark Alliance remaster, I can't wait to go through that again and co-op with my wife. And we've both been playing It Takes Two as well, which is the best co-op game in so long. It's brilliant. So stuff like that. I guess sort of try something that you might not usually go to, and that in itself can provide like a sort of more original spark. Mm-hmm. Next question from Steve. This is a sort of a potential scenario, who says, you're playing Returnal and finally beat the third boss at midnight, but adulting prevents you from going further. What do you do? Do you A, die in a blaze of glory so that your progress is saved, or B, put your PS5 to rest and pray that a patch or power outage doesn't ruin your progress? Now, this comes from Returnal not having a save system. It does when you reset altogether, but if the game updates overnight, the PS5 will do that automatically. It'll automatically close the game and you'll have lost wherever you were. You also can't checkpoint, etc., etc. Apparently our house mark are working on it, but it's leading to loads of situations like this where you are playing at 2 a.m. maybe you've had a big 3-hour long run, and it's like, do I leave it and hope that nothing happens, or do I just die so at least I've banked it? What would you do?
For me personally, I'd go down in a blaze of glory, and then I would look my child in the eye and say to them, like, this is the sacrifice that I'm willing to make for you. And the baby would look up to me and be like, take out its dummy and just be like, I know, father. And I'd be like, that is shocking. That is shocking that you can speak at, how old are you again? I am 3 weeks old. Wow. Okay.
I've been playing for a long time.
I
think for me, because I literally did this the other night, it took me ages to beat the third boss, and then when I finally did, I just kept playing, and it was like 1:30 a.m. I just kept going, and I was like, I'll just see how far I can go. And just, I will always gamble that it'll be okay in life. I'll just gamble everything will be okay. And so I got to about 2:30 a.m. and I was like, well, I'm doing all right. I've got a good build. I don't want to reset it. So I was just like, I'll just put the PS5 to sleep and hope that it's fine. But I have read so many stories of the game updating overnight, the network dropping out. There's a horrible bug where the game doesn't recognize any interactions, where you go into a room and you can't get out of it anymore, and you can't interact with the doors auto open, but they just don't in this case. Stuff like that just really, really sucks. And Housemarque have, obviously it's their most ambitious thing yet. They've never done anything this big, and there's a lot of bugs. For the most part, it's tight. And I've not personally had any big progress losing things, but I've definitely seen them doing the rounds. So next question from Marcus the Thief, who says, what's up, fellow buddy, tall vampire lady lovers? What video game ended up pulling you down into another hobby rabbit hole? Mine was the epic Baldur's Gate, which ended up getting me well and truly hooked into D&D.
Oh, so it's like, what is a tangential thing?
Mine would be skateboarding. Just give me Tony Hawk's and the entire skateboarding craze of the early 2000s.
I have to echo that, actually. I think that is like a perfect thing, because it wasn't until I played like the Tony Hawk's 1 and 2 especially that it became like a real thing. I was like, oh, you know what? I actually do want to like not just wear Vans clothing and just like have the flat peak cast. I'm going to go out there and buy a skateboard. And I remember buying one around the same time that Tony Hawk's 3 came out and being shockingly bad at it.
Going like,
I can't grind on this immediately. I'm rubbish at this.
A grind in real life, grinding a skateboard life is terrifying. I barely could do an ollie in the first place, but combining that, jumping at a rail was just, I don't know how anyone gets past that.
The thing is that what people don't tell you as well is that you need to wax up a lot of like curbs and stuff like that if you're going to do any sort of like grinds or stalls, and not knowing this, you just stop dead just as soon as you get and you're like, whoa,
because do you remember what your first deck was like, what your skateboard looked like?
Because mine was yellow and had black sort of like crisscrosses all the way down it, and in the center X had an outcut of like, I think it was the Element logo.
Okay, that's pretty cool. I had to, like, in the middle of the craze of like, Mom, I need this right now. Let's go to the shops and get it. The only one that was in stock was a Pikachu one. And
so you win. Well, you beat mine out.
These days, that would be all right. But I got home with my little Pikachu one, and I was like, oh, it's full size. It's clearly, you know, the right size. It's not junior. Yeah. But it's a Pikachu thing. And like, obviously, Pokemon was a big deal. It was still the early 2000s. But little hard man into the wrestling me was like, this is too soft. This is just Pikachu. So I drew all over it. I gave him sunglasses and like a little hat. And I tried to be cool.
Amazing.
Still got pointed at and laughed at.
You did basically the cheap meme with like the spliff and the glasses come down on it.
I think if I had like a sticker pack, I could have made it work or something. But just, you only young and you're terrified of anyone thinking anything at all times, and it was just like walking through the estate and like sort of getting laughed at and just be like, it's just me with my Pikachu board, I just want to be cool and do the grinds. And
I just remember walking through, you just reminded me, walking, holding my skateboard and somebody being like, you got to ride that thing or what? And me just being like, oh yeah, actually, I've just been that guy who carries around a skateboard.
Sometimes and also like going down a hill, like again, terrifying, but just like sitting on it and flying down a hill was way more applicable than trying to actually stand on it and go down a hill. Anyway, very quick question for the last one by Jean Malave. I'm going to go with Malave or Malav. Why is Max Payne 4 not a thing yet with a whole ton of exclamation marks and question marks? I don't know. I don't know.
Man, Rockstar are just sitting on a big bag of money. Like,
just put Max Payne 3 out again. Like,
you can't play that game on anything other than booting up an original Xbox 360 or like whatever.
360 or PS3, yeah.
Yeah, you can't play it on any other version. Just re-release it with like a slight HD upgrade and people would buy it hands. Oh, it's like even so cinematic. It pushed the consoles to their limits as well. Mm-hmm. It looked great. It played amazing. The multiplayer was surprisingly brilliant.
Multiplayer was actually really weirdly solid for a game that had slow motion mechanics between other players. Like, if you got caught in someone else's view, then you would slow down as well.
It's so fun. Really,
I do. But I also, as well, like, if we were going to just shout out, because you did your best monologues in gaming that just went up, and like where Max Payne's in that one, and for Max Payne 2, but Max Payne 3's script is like legit one of Dan Houser's best ever pieces of work, and it's the most overlooked thing ever. But like, that game is written so stupidly well.
The only thing that I wish that they'd done is maybe cut the story in half. Like, they could have easily cut out a fair chunk of it and still just slap the ending on, and you would have had an immaculate, if shorter, game. Mm-hmm. And they could have used that then put into like the groundwork for Max Payne 4, because let's face it, it is a long game. It's like, it's probably like, if you sat down and played it from start to finish, it's like, what, like
threes? I think it is the longest, like sort of maybe 15. Well, I don't know, in my head it's longer because there's a lot of cutscene work.
Well,
there's
no cutscenes and a lot of failed missions for me as well, so I want to say it's around a 20 to 25 hour thing, which for a game with that premise is quite long.
I that's one of those things where I just want to make a list called like stuff I need you to play, because it's just it's such a great take on that character, and just it's so dark and it's brilliant.
Interestingly enough, our boss has just okayed a series where we're going to be looking at our favorite films ever made. Ooh. So I recorded mine the other day, which should be going up on What Culture Main at some point soon. Mm-hmm. That means that there might be leverage to say that we can do our favorite games or games that we should play, and then we could do it, and you could just list every single Metal Gear Solid game.
Oh, you're not wrong. If I just sort of Shovel Knight, Mortal Kombat 9, just sort of like stand. Yeah, I mean, I would happily do that. I think that anything that sort of encourages people to check out those games that got completely overlooked at the time would be awesome. But yes, for now, thanks to everybody for sending in their questions. It's been a bloody lovely UBP.
UBP.
And thanks very much, Jules Gill. I've been Scott Tailford. This has been the Untitled Banter podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye, everyone. Bye-bye. Oh, actually, before we go, big announcement. next week you will be able to take part in the Banties. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. Have you ever wondered what Scott and Jules thinks about the state of the gaming industry and what they thought of the last year in terms of titles and releases? Well, tune in next week where we give out awards such as Biggest Steaming Pile of Bollocks.
Tune in next time where we remember the thing we were supposed to do for this week's show. Well, we actually remembered it yesterday. We'll just do it next week. We did just realize...
I was going to say, clean up that tuxedo t-shirt that you wear to make yourself look really cool at parties, because it's time to get smart.
We looked up the half mark. If the amount of time that we've been doing this show, it was like we should do it halfway towards like a 1 year anniversary of it.
Yeah.
And then we realized at the beginning of the week that that's actually this week's show. And then we just proceeded to forget to do it this week. But we're going to do some awards. We're going to do the Banties. We'll put them together for next week. We don't have any categories. We have a few categories.
What people should do is hit us up on the hashtag of #UBP and then submit what they think there should be categories for, yes, along with their questions, and then we can answer them in relation to their questions as well.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'll put another asking tweet thing out next Thursday as well, sure, for any last minute ones and stuff. The leading category is the Steaming Bollock Award, and we haven't awarded that yet.
Which video game has been the biggest steaming pile of bollocks?
I mean, it's definitely Cyberpunk. Cyberpunk remains steaming. It's still not on sale.
Marvel's Avengers?
At least that came out. At least Sony were like, we can sell this. Like, Cyberpunk isn't sellable. Sony has still not put it on the store. Like, it's still just sitting in a corner somewhere.
I think that Cyberpunk's going to have to be my Jules's biggest regret of 2020. I feel like I'm going to come in with a full defense.
I think you should stand by the PC version, the next gen version. It's hard to do. Anyway, we'll catch you all next week for the Banties. Thank you all very much, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.